Okay, Rabbi Riskin, we're ready to go. It's a pleasure to have you, and want to welcome everybody, and we can get started ASAP. You're in New York, I presume, I know, and welcome, and thank you for agreeing to give the shiur.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be with all of you. And I would like to discuss with you this evening one of the most difficult parashiyot in the Torah, Parashat Toldot. There are many questions which we can ask. I'd like to begin by asking my question from the perspective of Rivka, and then if there's time, I will ask my question from the perspective of Yitzchak. Let's start with Rivka. There is an apparent problem between husband and wife. They disagree about a major issue. Who should be the son who merits the bechora, the birthright? Twins, the eldest is Esav. Immediately after Esav emerges Yaakov. Who is worthy of the Bechorah, of the firstborn? Esav is, after all, the one who emerged first. Yitzchak apparently wishes to bestow the birthright upon Esav. Rivka disagrees and has her son Yaakov put on the garb of Esav and skins, animal skins, goat skins, so that he feels like Esav, deceive his father, and pose to be the elder brother. Why is this what Rivka does? He disagrees. It's legitimate for a husband and wife to disagree. After all, the Torah itself says in the beginning of Bereshit, Lo tov heyota adam levado, it's not good for a human being to be alone. Ese lo ezer kenegdo, let me make for him a help opposite. Ezer kenegdo. Rashi says, Im zachah, if he merits, ezer, shall be a help. Im lo zachah, if he doesn't merit, kenegdo lihilachem, she will always be against him to fight with him. I once had a philosophy professor who introduced the class to his wife as Mrs. Kenegdo. Rashi notwithstanding, the words are an oxymoron. If you're an Azer, you're not Kenegdo. If you're Kenegdo, you're not an Azer. If you're an opposite, you're not a help. That's not the truth. Pshuto shel mikra, the pshat in the verse, tells me as clearly as possible that the greatest Azer, the greatest help, is somebody who occasionally disagrees. A wife must know, as a husband must know, how to disagree in a loving fashion. Yes, without a question. It's important to know how to disagree with respect. But disagreement is legitimate. So why doesn't Rivka simply disagree? Go to dinner, husband and wife. Over coffee or tea. Rivka should have said to her husband, Yitzchak, whatever she called him, I love you very much, but I think you're making a tragic mistake. And Rivka had three very powerful arguments to use. First of all, Rav Yavod Zair. She heard from an oracle. She heard from a great tzaddik who had at the very least Ruach HaKodesh, some kind of divine message. The elder brother will serve the younger brother. So she heard it from God, in effect, that Yaakov was the one who would receive the birthright. Secondly, he sold a mess of pottage to Esav for the birthright. That was the deal. Esav agreed to it. By so doing, he spurned the Bechorah, the birthright, for a mess of pottage. Listen, there are many Jews who spurn their birthright for a mess of pottage. Every time they go to an unkosher steakhouse or an unkosher Chinese restaurant, they spurn the birthright for a mess of pottage. It happens. And it happened in the Bible. And that's Rebecca's second argument. My beloved husband, your son, Esav, gave away the birthright for some lentil soup. He doesn't deserve the birthright if he could give it away so easily. The third argument. And what's amazing is that her third argument appears in the Bible right before chapter 27, the last verse in chapter 26 of the book of Genesis of Sefer Bereishit. The Bible itself says, "Vayihi Esav ben arba'im shana," Esav was 40 years of age. "Vayikach isha et Yehudit bat be'eri achiti vet bosmat bat elon achiti," he took to wife two Hittites, intermarriage in those days. If there was one specific charge that Abraham gave to Eliezer in order to find a proper wife for Yitzchak, don't marry a Canaanite. Don't let him marry a Hittite. So this was the biblical intermarriage. Fatihiena morat ruach liYitzchak uLirivka, and this was a bitterness of spirit to Yitzchak and to Rebekah. And the very next verse, after the Torah says it was a bitterness of spirit, "Vayhi ki zaken Yitzchak," it happened when Isaac became old, "Vatichena inav mera'ot," and his eyes were dimmed from seeing, "Vayikirat Esav beno agadol," and he called unto himself Esav, his elder son, and he tells him, "I want to give you the birthright. I want to give you the blessing before I die." So therefore, Rivka could have easily said, "My husband, you just suffered terribly from the fact that your son Esav intermarried. He certainly doesn't deserve the Bechorah." There were three valid arguments she could have used. Why did she not use them? And I want to ask another question. Rivka is certainly a very intelligent woman. Doesn't she understand that her ruse will soon be discovered? After all, Esav is going to come in with a venison meat. He's going to expect the birthright and the blessing. Father will turn to him and will tell him, "I already gave it away. I gave it away to Yaakov. It must have been Yaakov, and he must have deceived me, but I gave it to him." And Esav will be very upset. And Yaakov cannot possibly allow, Yitzchak cannot possibly allow Yaakov to keep a blessing which was won under false pretense. Where does that leave Rebecca? The wife who deceived her husband? And she knew that she would have to be discovered for what she did. Why did she do it? Why did she suggest it? Amilta da'avide regaluye? A matter which the greater natura naturally will have to be revealed? Those are my questions. Let's see how the story unfolds. But I think the answer to the questions, and in order to answer them, I'm relying heavily on two important commentaries, on the Malbim and on Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. I believe you will agree with me that this is one of the most important stories in the entire Bible and foreshadows Jewish future in an amazing and uncanny fashion. Let's start from the beginning. The Malbim posits that discussion that we just claimed never happened, the discussion over coffee, when Rivka presents her three major arguments as to why Esav should not get the Bechora, should not get the birthright. The Malbim posits that discussion indeed took place. One night, after coffee, Yitzchak, Ike. This is what I believe. So says Rivka. And Yitzchak answered her. Yitzchak says to her, "My beloved wife, don't you think I understand? Do you think I'm really blind inside as well as outside? Don't you think I see these two boys? And I see how one of them that one of them is the religious, bookish, studious son, Yaakov, Ishtam Yosef Ohalim, and the other is a bit of a precocious, excitable, and exciting, typical man of the world?" Aggressive. Into the fields and into the hunt. Who entraps with mellifluous words and tricksterish manner. "I see these two sons, and I see the differences between them. And therefore I've discovered that I'm going to make a very real split between the Bechora, which is the birthright, the firstbornship, and the Bracha, which is the blessings, the material, physical blessings of the land of Israel." Rebecca doesn't agree. Rebecca turns to her husband and says, "My beloved husband, once again you're making a mistake. The Romans taught, Christianity accepted, that we make a split and render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. We Jews believe that everything is God's, and everything must be sanctified, and that everything must be divine, and you can't make a distinction between the material and the spiritual, between the body and the soul. You can't make such a split between Yaakov and Esav. I want you to understand," says Rebecca, "Torah needs a material infrastructure. If Torah is going to take over the world, Torah needs PR. Torah needs a state. Torah needs a protective IDF, Israeli Defense Forces. Torah needs economy, and a very good economy. You can't divide between the two, and Yaakov has to get it all. Yitzchak is very upset. But he can't get it all because he wouldn't know what to do with it. Yitzchak is four-eyed and round shoulders. He sits over the Gemara all day and he gets up only to pray three times a day and further to shake back and forth. Yaakov is not worldly. Yaakov, if he needs the hands of Esav, if he has to create an IDF, an Israeli Defense Forces, a standing army, he'll trip over his Uzi. He's a bit of a chnun. He's a bit of a neb nerd. He's not made for fighting in a battle. He's not made for economic acumen. He knows how to study Torah, and that's it. And therefore, my beloved wife, I've made up my mind. I'm going to give the Bechora to Yaakov. The Bracha to Esav. The religious and spiritual birthright to Jacob. The material blessings that will go to Esav. Rivka is unhappy. She knows that she can't convince her husband. She knows that the only thing she can possibly do is in some way prove to him that Yaakov is capable of using the hands of Esav if he truly believes that he's in the right and that he deserves to receive the gifts from his father. And positing that this discussion occurred and concluded the way it concluded, I would say as follows. I believe that just look at the blessing that Yitzchak gave to the son whom he believed was Esav. Vayitein lecha Elokim mital hashamayim u'mishmanei ha'aretz v'rov dagan v'tirosh. And may the Almighty give to you from the dew of the heavens and from the fat of the land, which means the oil, and from a great deal of corn and wine and oil. There's not one word about the blessing of Abraham. He says not one word about spirituality. Yes, he says that you will have to serve your brother, or rather that your brother will serve you. Political superiority, material superiority, but no spirituality. Fascinating that later on, when what I suggested would happen, happens. When Esau comes in with the venison meat, and Yitzchak is terribly, terribly discombobulated, he asks, who who is this? What is happening? I already gave this to the other brother. Realizes that he gave it to Yaakov, and that's the way. And Yitzchak's response, Gam Baruch Yeh. That son indeed will be blessed and have the blessing. And he says it. But he realizes now that what Rivka had told him had been correct all along. That Yaakov was capable of fighting in the IDF. That Yaakov was capable of donning the garb and the skins of an Esav. And then Esav says, after he cries out a great and loud and piercing and bitter cry, but my beloved father, don't you have a blessing left for me? And he gives him a kind of semi-blessing, but it's not a real blessing. The problem, however, is that Yitzchak had another blessing. And that comes out at the end of Parashat Toldot. Chapter 28. Yitzchak calls to Yaakov. He hears that Esav is out to murder him. Vayevorech oto, and he blesses Yaakov. And he says to him as follows. Ve'el Shaddai yivarech otcha, v'yafrechu yarbecha, v'yita lekahal amim. May the Almighty God bless you, and make you fruitful, and cause you to multiply, and you shall be for a gathering of nations. That's the bechora, not the bracha. That's the birthright, that all of the nations will rush to our holy temple. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah devar Hashem Yerushalayim v'chetetu charvotam li'itim v'chanitoteihem l'mazmerot. They'll beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. Humanity will not learn war anymore. V'yitein l'cha et birkat Avraham l'cha u'zaracha itach. And the Lord God shall give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your seed after you. Vayitein lecha et birkat Avraham l'cha u'zaracha itach v'rishtecha et eretz megurecha asher natan Elokim li'Avraham, and you will inherit the land. So what do we see? That there were two aspects. There was the blessing and there was the birthright. And Rabbi Metzger, in effect, teaches from this. The material blessing was given to Esau. Spiritual blessing was given to Yaakov. And I understand very well why Rivka had to do what she did. Rivka had to do what she did because Rivka had to prove to her husband that he had made a tragic mistake. Yaakov wear the garb of Esau. And when he sees that that's truly the case, Then Yitzchak says, Gam Baruch Hi. Indeed, he will be blessed. And Yaakov deserves the blessing and the birthright. If Yaakov can learn what to do with the news, Yaakov can succeed in the world of economy as well, in the world of the military as well, in the world of politics as well. That Rivka saves the day, because were it not for Rivka, all of us would be not B'nai Yisrael. Rivka truly succeeds. And Rivka has succeeded not only for her generation. Rivka succeeds for all generations. What is the religious Zionist enterprise? To a great extent, what is the difference of opinion between the Haredi world and the religious Zionist world? The Haredi world said, wait for the Messiah to come to bring you to Israel. We won't know how to fight, we religious Jews. We won't know how to establish an IDF, we religious Jews. But let's wait until God brings us on eagle's wings. Rivka teaches, the Torah teaches, that's not the way to go. We have to take our destiny into our own hands. And that's precisely why Rivka says what she says. Yaakov is going to make it. Yaakov is going to do it. And Torah requires the political, the material infrastructure if Torah is truly going to take over the world. That's our goal. Kivacha nevrechu kol mishpachot ha'adamah. Through you shall be blessed all of the families of the earth. You see, Yitzchak did have another bracha. Yitzchak had the blessing of Abraham. And he gives this blessing to Yaakov, the son who has not taken Hittite wives. This blessing had always been reserved for Yaakov. Because the conversation took place and Yitzchak had decided to we have a yeshivat hezder today in Israel. If religious Zionists returned to Israel and found it necessary to fight for Israel and were in the forefront of the army in the fighting, it's because we have accepted upon ourselves the legacy of Rivka, the philosophy of Rivka, the direction of Rivka. That vindicates Rivka unto all generations. This is the story from Rebecca's perspective. Why Rebecca, in quotation marks, deceived the husband. She didn't really deceive him. She was proving her point to him. Now I want to spend a few moments about Yitzchak. Yaakov and their relationship. how could Yaakov have said, Ani Esav Achicha? Ani Esav, Anochi Esav Bincha. I am Esav, your son. How could Yaakov have lied to his father? How could Yaakov have deceived his father? And one can say, of course, he was acting on orders of his mother, but he was an adult. The Torah tells us. He was already of an age to get married. He was 40 years old. He can't hide behind his mother's apron strings. Why did Yaakov do what he did? And please hear me very well, because I want very much to explain the moments. Yaakov. Parshat Toldot opens with a description of the two boys and their growing up. And the Torah tells us, Vayigdalu hana'arim, the two lads grew. Vayhi Esav ish yodei atzayid ish sadeh. Esav knew entrapment, knew the hunt and the entrapment of people and the hunt of animals. Ish sadeh, a man of the fields, outdoors. V'Yaakov ishtam yoshev ohalim. Yaakov is wholehearted who dwell in tents. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, and Yitzchak loved Esav because the venison meat was in his mouth, because he constantly brought for him what he loved. V'rifko hevet et Yaakov, Rifko loved Jacob. Yaakov, in a patriarchal society, in a society in which it was the father who handed down the baton of real leadership. Yaakov desperately yearned for Yitzchak's love. One day, a true incident. I have a very good friend, my wife and I, Dasha Rittenberg, from the town of Bendin in Poland. She's a graduate of the Holocaust. Her whole life was informed by the Holocaust. She writes poetry. She goes to Europe every year, and she teaches in Poland and Russia. And she relives the Holocaust all of her life. And this particular morning, she said to us suddenly, she said, you know, the happiest day of my life was the day that I was taken to the concentration camp. My wife and I looked at her in disbelief. I was a rebellious daughter. My older sister davened better than I, longer than I, and was more careful between leaking milk than I. And she was the favorite daughter. And if there was one pat of butter, she would get it. And then there was a kinderaktion, a roundup of the children. And after the Obersturm von Führer came into the house, and I was the only one there, my sister was take me. Now, my mother, when I was in a rebellious mood, would often say, you couldn't have been born from my womb. You're too rebellious. It's impossible. They must have changed you from someone else in the hospital where you were born. And I cannot tell you how badly that made me feel. But this particular day, when there was a Kinderaktion, a children's roundup, and the Obersturmbannfuhrer went from home to home, away with him. And before he was out the door, my mother fell on her knees in front of his boots and started licking his boots and said, "You have to free my daughter. She's my beloved child. You have to free my daughter. I love her more than I love my own life. Kill me, but release my daughter." That moment, says Dasha Wittenberg, I understood that my mother really did love me. At that moment, I understood that in her eyes, I truly was her child. The first few days in Auschwitz, I was warmed by that thought and by that realization. Now let's go back to the Torah itself. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav kitzayid b'fiv, v'rifko hevet et Yaakov. Yaakov felt unloved, forlorn, even hated. And Yaakov was in a very difficult position. He desperately wanted to be loved by his father. And he thought the way he would be loved by his father is if he acts like his father, like his brother. Because his brother is loved by the father. So he sweet talks the father. And he makes believe that he's going overboard in terms of kibbut av ha'ein. Definitely wants to feel his father's kiss. Definitely wants to feel his father's love and acceptance. And so, when he tells him to don the clothes of Esav and to put on the goat skin so that he'll, Yaakov is extremely willing to do so. Because Yaakov desperately wanted to be Esav. Desperately wanted to get his father's love. The only way he could do it is by acting like Esav. Very clearly and very simply, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, because that's what he wanted to be. The tragedy is, very often when we pretend to be someone other than ourselves, the punishment is that we become that other. Follow Yaakov in Laban land, in Aram Naharai. He becomes Esav. He out-Esav's Esav and the out-Laban's Laban. He stands up to everything. In effect, he becomes the deceiver. He becomes Esav. He becomes the mellifluous spokesperson. He becomes the one who fools Lavan with a fish, with a sheep. He makes speckled, streaked, and striped calves and sheep by means of a ruse. of acquired characteristics. He becomes a trickster. He becomes a deceiver. He becomes Esav. As soon as he leaves his father's house and goes on the way to Yaakov, to Yitzhak. I'm sorry, to Rebecca's family. Lavan. It's only the time of the wrestling match. Men are alone. Yaakov and the image of Esav, the master of Esav, the spirit of Esav, the historical being Esav. And maybe it's an Esav from the out, from without, and maybe it's an Esav from within. Yaakov realizes after 22 years with Lavan that he must disgorge Esav and every vestige of Esavism from within. That if Israel is going to succeed, then Yaakov must turn into Israel. And Yaakov cannot turn into Israel until he confronts Esav. And that's the point of the wrestling match in Parashat Vayishlach. That basis, Yaakov turns into Yisrael. Yaakov is the most special and blessed of all the patriarchs. Because Yaakov is the most finely drawn, and Yaakov is the one who truly develops in the beginning of the story. He's a rather rambunctious young man. As the story progresses, it's amazing to see its growth and development. Finally, in Parshat Vayishlach, he turns into Yisrael. He's the one who will prevail. Prevail against humans and even prevail against God. He's the one who will bring into the world the Tiferet. Compromise between and love. In effect, Yaakov, under the guidance of Rebecca, saves the way, and as a result, we are all B'nai Yisrael, and thank God, not B'nai Yisav.
Thank you. Again, if there are any questions, if anybody wants to either to speak up or to type in, we can do it that way.
How did Yaakov shake off the Esav from within him? I'll try to explain. Yaakov can mean two things. And Kishmo Ken Hu, as was his name, so was he. Yaakov can mean, as the Sephorno says it, the heel is the end of the human being, the end of his body. Hu yishaer v'hu yitgaber basof. He will be there at the end. He will survive and he will prevail at the end. That's the notion of the heel. He will be there at the end. He will win out. or Yaakov could mean a heeled sneak, someone who comes around from behind, someone who does not know how to confront. After what happens in terms of the jealousy between the brothers, the desire that he has so much to win over, win out over his brother. He does it without confronting. He does it through deception with his father. He does it even through deception with Lavan. And the peels, he peels over the wands so that when they cohabit, the sheep, they will look at the peeled wands and streaked, speckled, and striped sheep will emerge. And therefore, because of subterfuge, he fools Lavan and gets an extra salary. Yaakov's whole pattern of life is the second interpretation, healed sneak. This is not good. Either because Yosef is born and he wants to fight a different image, an image of confrontation, not an image of escape and deception. Or because he lived with Lavan for 22 years, he saw what Lavan looked like. He saw what the ultimate Ramai trickster looks like. He didn't want to become him. At the end of the day, Yaakov emerges triumphant. And that's really that's when he stopped deceiving and started confronting. And there's no greater confrontation than a wrestling match. No one is escaping anybody else. Everybody is, the two participants are frontally fighting each other, and let the best man win.
That would explain
term religious Zionist and not modern Orthodox.
Can I just ask a follow-up to the prior question? That would explain how Yaakov beat the Esav outside of him, without him. But you had said that there was an Esav within Yaakov, that a yearning for his father's love, and with that he assumed some of the qualities of Esav, and after he wrestled with the Malach, he lost those. So I was wondering how he lost how he shook the Esav that was within him.
I don't think he lost them at all. I think that he had them. He had them, and he had them while he was growing up. He disgorged them, but even not completely. You see, Abraham, after he has his name change, goes from Avram to Avraham. He's never called Avram again. Yaakov is still called Yaakov alongside of Yisrael. When he faces, much later, after he leaves Lavan, Shechem, he still is not frontal and honest. He doesn't tell him, my sons can never marry your daughters. He accepts subterfuge. He accepts circumcision, figuring that then, when they're weak, after 3 days, they'll be able to steal back Dinah. He doesn't really confront. The end of his life, he does confront. The end of his life, when he's giving the blessing to his grandchildren, and he wants to put his right hand on the younger son of Ephraim, and his father says, and his son says, Lo chein avi. This is not the way to do it. He, in effect, says frontally, the younger one is more deserving. And then I think he frees himself from the Yaakovism that plagued him all of his life. And when he blesses his children, the same thing is true. When he blesses his children, he also tells each of them exactly the way it is and shows that he has freed himself in Parashat Vayechi from the inability to confront which had been his calling card until then. Why do I choose the term religious Zionist and not modern Orthodox? I began to say, religious Zionism uses all of the materialism, all of the physicality, all of the economic infrastructure in order to express the Jewish message. And therefore, I think religious Zionism expresses it in a very powerful way. Modern Orthodoxy, to a certain extent, as well, because the difference between modern Orthodoxy and Haredism is, one of the differences is that modern Orthodoxy embraces the university. Modern Orthodoxy believes that we should not deny the world, we should attempt to sanctify the world. So I think from that perspective you're quite correct. But I think it's easier to see that the acceptance of power, a Savic power, and sanctifying that power, the acceptance of economic infrastructure and sanctifying that infrastructure by using the imagery of religious Zion and modern Orthodoxy. But it does work with modern Orthodoxy as well. What is the source that Yaakov wanted to be like Esav and get his father's love? To me, it's right between the lines. Or it says that he loved Esav. For a son, it's very difficult when his father doesn't love him. Very difficult to feel himself to be the rejected one. And once I understand that, I also understand why it was so easy for him to leave, because this is who he wanted. And the Dubal Andra, that he's a person of Zayed, a person of the hunt, Esau is. That's a different kind of rabbinical model and religious leader. Therefore, I think that.
Okay, if that's it for questions, it's 9:57 here.
I thank you all very much for listening. All the best. Laila Tov.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Riskin. Laila Tov. Have a good